everybody. This is Michael Steele. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. So glad you could be a part of just this wonderful happening, because that's what we do. We make it happen here with the podcast. As you know, you can get us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, wherever you get that podcast on. Don't forget to do that download thing. We love it when you do that. So we got a great conversation in line today. Buddy of mine is doing some very impressive work, as I like to say, out on the streets. He is Rinaldo Pearson, Director of External Affairs for Represent Us, the nation's largest grassroots anti-corruption campaign, bringing together conservatives, independents, and progressives to pass anti-corruption laws across the country. But before even joining forces with Represent Us, Rinaldo led Democracy Spring from the protest, I guess, with that Fixed Democracy First. Was that what that was, Rinaldo?
Yeah. It's a movement that, we've continued even with Represent Us. But and, yes, absolutely.
And you guys got involved in creating legislation, H.R. 1, and have done a number of things in putting together a couple of summits around the country. So you guys have been really involved, and it's such a pleasure, man, to have you on the podcast today, to sort of go through some of the backstories that, you know, folks don't really sort of see how they play out and how they really impact. And there's been a lot of stuff that we cover on the front line, like, you know, when the president does a tweet or, you know, something happens. But we don't really sort of get into why organizations like yours are important to sort of preserve the underpinnings of democracy. And Nevermore was that, I think, a question that was brought up for a lot of folks then this past week, where you had the president insert himself into the Roger Stone conviction, into that case, when the president, you know, basically tweeted, "Oh, it's a shame that they're doing all this to Roger Stone, and, you know, it's a rigged system." And then all of a sudden, literally 24 hours later, Barr and basically goes in and upends the sentencing recommendations of 7 to 9 years that his attorneys had put in and made a request to the judge for, to basically say, "We're throwing that out. We're going to come back with something." And it looks like, "Oh, geez, we won't even now. We want a new trial." What does that say to you? What alarm bells goes off for organizations like Represent Us in dealing with this idea of corruption?
Well, yeah, it's certainly, you said the words alarm bells. It certainly rings them, particularly when you're told, I'm a millennial, so when you're told and taught in school that there is supposed to be independent justice, right? And that no one's above the law. So when you hear about things like this, you certainly start to think, well, that doesn't seem to be a independent or fair or just thing. It certainly seems to be corrupt, particularly when you look at the definition of the word corruption, which it seems we've gotten away from. And then when you look at what the response has been, right? The bipartisan response has been from former attorneys from the Department of Justice and deputy attorney generals appointed by Bush and others. I mean, over the number is now over 2,000, right?
Right.
Who have written a letter, again, and bipartisan, to both sides of the aisle.
And that's been pretty impactful, too. I mean, a lot of people have been, at least my sense around town has been, they're a little bit stunned by that. And I think the administration itself is a little bit stung. Apparently Barr is. I mean, to have 2,000 former attorneys, speak out on this, it's a big
DOJ
deal.
DOJ attorneys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. DOJ attorneys. Right. Yeah, it's a pretty big deal.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think it speaks to the heart of what we're after and why our organization is steadily rising in terms of membership, donations and millions of views on our YouTube channel. It's getting at the heart of what is really upsetting Americans all across the political spectrum, and that is corruption. How we literally unrig the system seriously do that, right? To work for everyday Americans as opposed to the wealthiest few, which is a system we have now that works for the wealthy few at the expense of the many. So we have seen that, contrary to popular belief, we can bring conservatives and progressives and everyone in between together,
right,
to advance an anti-corruption electoral reforms across the country. In fact, we did so at a historic rate in 2018, where the news story was about, you know, flipping the House. The other news story really was this movement, where we won more anti-corruption and pro-democracy reforms than at any point in U.S. history, right, in red and blue states alike. I'm talking California, Massachusetts, and New York, and Missouri, North Carolina, Tennessee, wow, and even toss-up states, right, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. So we're seeing a real movement here, and it's growing every day.
So drill down on Represent Us. What is Represent Us? What is, I mean, your grassroots? So that means you're on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm happy to have an affiliation with you guys, working with you on yeah, a lot of your efforts. So let folks know what it is, what the focus is and why it's important what you're doing.
Absolutely. So yes, Represent Us is the nation's largest grassroots anti-corruption campaign that brings together, again, conservatives, progressives, and everyone in between to advance anti-corruption electoral reforms to unrig our political system.
So you guys are looking at legislation, federal and state, that address aspects of corruption or what's the emphasis?
I was just getting to that, and I'm so glad you asked that question, because the Constitution actually kicks back to the states when it comes to electoral law. So we have a theory of change that focuses on really history that shows that any of the major movements, where you're looking at marriage equality or prohibition, there have been state laws. The movements have started in the states. The state laws have been advanced first. And once you reach a certain number of states, that momentum then triggers the federal action. So, yes, we focus on the state and local reforms like automatic voter registration, mm-hmm, like independent redistricting commissions that combat partisan gerrymandering, like restoring the vote to returning citizens with past felony convictions, and or publicly funded elections or democracy vouchers or even dark money disclosures. These are the types of reforms that literally are revolutionary in the sense that they turn around a system from working for, you know, the wealthy few at the expense of the many. And so, we're seeing, again, these win in states that are both blue and red.
Right. I was going to say, so you found success in places like Missouri and New York, California and North Carolina, mm-hmm, in terms of getting people. What types of reforms are sort of the leading edge reform? Is it around redistricting? Is it around voting, meaning, you know, change in voter registration laws, et cetera? What seems to be the leading edge in terms of the types of reforms you're seeing, particularly where you have a crossover of conservative versus more progressive or even liberal states?
Yeah, so in Michigan, it was certainly independent redistricting commissions, mm-hmm, that won in Michigan. But even in Florida, it was, you know, Amendment Number 4, which restored the right to vote to 1.4 million returning citizens with past felony convictions. In Florida, that amendment passed with 1 million more votes than any of the candidates on the ballot. You know, these are winning initiatives. And even in New York City, which in just this past November, we won ranked choice voting, which is essentially an instant runoff where it makes third parties viable. And there are no more spoiler votes in campaigns.
Right.
But we just won that in New York City, which is, of course, the largest city in America. So that more than tripled the amount of Americans using ranked choice voting in the country.
So have you guys looked at national popular vote at all?
Yeah, we have, but you know, that's, you know, we got Fair Vote and other groups that are already working, you know, in that lane. So we invite And that's why we have this Unrig the System Summit now going in our third year, which we'll have in Miami, unrigsummit.com. You could go there and see May 15th through 17th, organizations like Fair Vote and others that run the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact Initiative. They certainly come to that conference, and we work to make sure that we are providing the ecosystem of support to advance all these movements to unrig the system.
Well, that's
so, yes,
good.
That's certainly part of the conversation.
I do a lot of work with MPV, and was a skeptic.
Wow, I didn't know that, Michael.
Yeah. I've been written a number of op-eds on it. Done
and I missed that.
A bunch of interviews. So I've been all. I'm a full on board advocate for a national popular vote. We've got 15 states in the District of Columbia. 16 jurisdictions are now part of the compact, totaling about 198 electoral votes, and all we need to do is get to 270. So if we can get some legislatures on board before July of this year, we could actually see in this upcoming election the application of national popular vote through the compact this November, which would be a game changer. It would be an absolute game changer.
Yeah, let's talk more about that offline. We have part of our team and strategy and accelerator that helps to advance these types of things when we've got the right folks in place at the state level, because half of the states are our ballot initiative states where we can put these things on the actual ballot and
right.
that type of direct democracy, but half of them are not,
and
they allow the legislative lobbying and the type of pressure campaigns on your state legislature. So exactly. But in either of the situations, we have, you know, a campaign accelerator to help advance on the ground these types of reforms when we've got the right mix. So I would, you know, hearing that you're actually directly involved in this. Yeah, we would love to talk about that,
absolutely.
Because it's important to remind folks that things like, for instance, the 26th Amendment, which this year is the 50th anniversary of it, which, of course, lowered the age of voting to 18 and advance the youth vote across the nation. I dare folks to Google the history of that amendment and see how fast it passed. So this idea that it can't happen, I mean, that was in a matter of weeks that 26th Amendment passed.
Right. I was going to say, a lot of stuff in this space requires momentum. And mm-hmm. what I think a lot of people tend to undersell is that you've got to go out and build up all of this momentum. But I think around certain issues, particularly in the voting space, you're going to find more momentum among everyday citizens, the folks who feel that the system is rigged against them, to use that phrase, that denies their full access to the ballot box, makes it more difficult for them to vote even when they do have access to the ballot box, et cetera, they're going to be much more inclined to change up that system than not. And so the energy is there. It's just a matter of tapping into it and actually utilizing it.
I agree 100%. Here's what I found, Michael. I just finished a 700-mile-plus walk from Atlanta to D.C. declaring a state of emergency.
Which, folks, I could not believe his brother did that. But, yeah, he did. he walked from Atlanta to D.C., people.
My ankles are still inflamed. I'm like, how did the ancestors, man? You know,
I
found in meeting all these folks, again, conservative, progressive, independent, you name it, white, black, whatever, everyone just wants to feel heard. They want to feel seen. And no matter what their issue is, they see very clearly that it is caught in the death grip of corruption.
Yeah.
On both sides of the aisle, right? So this is a post-partisan movement. In fact, you know, the real purity test of who really is country over party is really about this, around this reform of ranked choice voting, because that really lets me know how postpartisan or transpartisan you really are, because that tells me that it's not so much about your party. You are actually open to the idea of third parties making you better. Or, as we've seen in Maine and other places where you already have ranked choice voting, a more civil campaign where folks are less cutthroat, because they realize, well, they may not be my opponent's supporter, may not be I may not be number one for them, but I do want them to be or I do want to be number two for them or number three for them, because that makes my campaign, you know, viable right. In the end. So this is what this is all about, really raising the voices of the people and really restoring a government, if we've ever had it, that's truly of, by, and for the people.
I think that that's an essential part of it, and it's important. I think people, it's important, and I try to get this across to the folks who groove to this podcast, and I really appreciate those who sort of, you know, take a sidestep and kind of get into this space, because what we try to do is bring the information and get them locked in on some of the stuff that, you know, that you're talking about, that you're doing. And it's important for them to know exactly, you know, how this plays out, how these narratives are formed, and why our system is constructed the way it is. You know, you have right now a president who ran on draining the swamp. And yet when we see what he did with the pardons and the clemency that he's given to clearly identifiable criminals. Yeah. I mean, and here's the kicker. It wasn't like they went through a trial and proclaimed their innocence and then they were found guilty. These are people who admitted, yeah, I did it. I laundered the money. Yeah, I tried to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. Yeah, I did it, right? And then the president comes back and gives them a clean sheet and says, well, you know, you now have your rights restored. It will pretend like you never did what you did. And it will even pretend that you never admitted that you did it. And instead of draining the swamp of corruption, he's basically refilling it. And so how do we, as citizens, how should we react to that? I have my own opinion on that, but you're the guest, so I'll let you share. How should we respond to that? And I guess ultimately, should we even care? I mean, should we be mad, or should we just like, well, it's Trump, and you know, he's not accountable, and yeah, so what? I mean, because I get confliction out there. I get these conflicted views from people about all of this stuff, and I'm just trying. I feel like I'm in Moonstruck, that famous scene where Cher just slaps the shit out of it, tells them to snap out of it. You know, that's what I want to do to a lot of Americans.
Well, I mean, a part of the answer is what you're saying. As the former Republican National Committee chairman, it's quite refreshing, you know, to hear you break the silence. I mean, let's not forget what Dr. King said. He said we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words and actions of the bad people. I should rewind. Vitriolic words. We're hearing a lot of that. Right. And actions of the bad people, but also for the appalling silence of the good people. You know, so that's what it takes. I mean, you're absolutely right. You got to break the silence, man. And then you got to channel that energy constructively. So yes, you should have righteous indignation. There's a lot of reason to have it today, but you should also be constructively channeling that energy towards some movement. Yeah, I would argue ours is I think perhaps the most important, because it's intersectional. All right, it ties to every other. No other issue really can advance in earnest until we have a system that's fixed. Right, the issues you think of assume that we have a fully functional democracy to address them, and right now we don't. So I'm glad to hear that you are one of those few, and I hope to God that there will be more who continue, and we're seeing more. So there are good signs, right?
Right,
the 2,000 plus former DOJ attorneys bipartisanly coming together to call Barr to the carpet is no small feat. For judges, you know, to now be organizing along those same lines, this is what it takes. This is what it takes.
All right. So I want to pick up on the point that you just made about the impact on the justice system going forward. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. We got some sponsors who like to hang out with our podcasters as well. So I'll let them have their fun. And when we come back, we're going to have more great conversation with Rinaldo Pearson right after this. All right, everybody, we're chatting with my buddy Rinaldo Pearson. As you know, he is the director of external affairs for Represent Us, the nation's largest grassroots anti-corruption campaign that's doing yeoman's work out there. And we love you to get involved and check out what they're doing. You guys are represent.us. Is that the...
That's right. That's it. That's the website.
So go to represent.us. You want to check out more of what we're talking about and learn more about what Rinaldo and their movement is doing. Rinaldo, before we took the little sidewind with our friends during the break, you were talking sort of laying down some tracks overall about our system, our criminal justice system, and certainly specifically the justice system itself. How much of this... Or what can we do? Or what should we be thinking about as you guys are out there sort of raising the flags about how corruption is eating at the core of these institutions and mm-hmm. fighting back at that? How do we go about making sure this system is not just fair but bipartisan and that it is, I guess for me, I'd like to see a much more independent justice system. I think the attorney general should be an office that's run independent from
the executive branch.
I think we should now create that space where you can run for attorney general just as well as running for president and vice president of the United States, because the work is too important. I think Trump has exposed is just how vulnerable it is to the whims and wiles of a corrupt president compounded by, if not the corruption of an attorney general, at least the acquiescence, the appearance of acquiescence or favoritism because of their view of a unitary executive or supreme executive and therefore unwilling to actually stand independent, but instead act more like the president's lawyer. So I'm all about reshaping the system. How do you see, what steps, measures should we as citizens be calling for? What is represented us calling for as we go beyond this cycle and look into the next administration, whether it's Trump at the helm of it or not? But what should we be looking at?
Well, I left off with this quote from Dr. King about breaking silence, but, you know, Lincoln said something similarly also, and I can't stress enough how important that is for us to really use our First Amendment rights. And Lincoln said to sin. He said to sin by silence when they should protest makes cowards of men. Mm-hmm. And that's Republican Lincoln there. Okay.
Right.
So that is certainly one side of it, and I can't stress again how important that is. For us to again exercise that First Amendment right. But again, that's one side of it. The other side of the coin is channeling that energy into a constructive movement. And I'll continue to point right back to this intersectional movement of movements that is this anti-corruption or pro-democracy movement of unrigging the system. That's so important. We've got chapters all across the country, and there are several allies of ours who do as well. I would argue that we're the biggest and baddest in the game, but you know, join one of these groups and see how you can help to unrig the system, to advance these anti-corruption and pro-democracy reforms at the state and local level where you are, for instance, me, before even Democracy Spring and before me being an administrator at Harvard, I was in the criminal justice reform movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me really, so we were winning in that fight, it seemed, you know, at least on the executive branch for a while, it looked like we were finally shifting the tide
right,
on that
turning
front.
Turning the corner, right.
Exactly, turning the corner, only to realize that the real sea change comes at the legislative level, through Congress, in other words.
Right.
And, you know, when you look at the civil rights movement, successful movement, right, what makes that movement successful? The fact that there's a 1964 Civil Rights Act and a 1965 Voting Rights Act, which, by the way, of course, we know was gutted in 2013. But when you look at that, you see, well, okay, we need the federal legislation. And on every single issue, even on the ones where there's broad bipartisan consensus, amongst the citizens, at least, even if it doesn't look like it at the national level, those who are actually in office in Congress. The fact is, because of our campaign finance system, where our Congress members are spending up to 70% of their time fundraising from the tiniest slice of the 1%, they literally end up kowtowing to the wealthy few at the expense of the many. So this is why I graduated to this movement, because I really did see that if we expect to win on any issue it is, we have to fix this political system first. And that starts at the local level.
Is it fixable?
And
is it fixable at this point?
I do, but I believe it. I mean, look, again, I wouldn't have thought so before I joined this movement and started to see win by win. You can go to represent.us /wins and see how many wins we have had already. Again, we made history in 2018. Over 20 reforms won at the state level in 2018, and around the same number last year in 2019. I mean, that win I told you about earlier in Florida, Amendment 4, 1.4 million returning citizens with their votes restored, having had, you know, felony convictions in the past. That's more folks brought to the franchise than since the Voting Rights Act.
But will they
That's
vote?
That's revolutionary.
But you're right. But you know, this has always kind of been my question/peak with a lot of these efforts, and is that they tend not to be wraparound. Like, for example, take voter registration. Everyone loves to do voter registration. They registrate the hell out of voters, right? Oh, we're going to get you to vote. We're going to get you to register. But there is no wraparound to get people to the polls. If you register me in March of this year, in a typical election cycle, by the time I get to November, I've forgotten I've even registered to vote.
Number one. Yeah.
And number two, the idea of actually getting someone to the polls, there's oftentimes an assumption made that voters will show up or that the campaigns will turn that vote out. And I get it. Those organizations are just I'm solely in the business of registering voters, or I'm solely in business of kind of, you know, raising the bar and awareness on an issue or whatever. But what is the wraparound? What is the wraparound with Represent Us? How do you go about not just doing the thing that you're doing, but actually sustaining it through maybe other activities or some other way? I mean, I know, you know, I talk about HR1, right? The legislation there.
Right.
Was that you sort of then try to get it into a legislative package and push it through? I mean, what's the wraparound with organizations like yours beyond just the straight up front awareness and we want to call everybody to order on this particular issue?
So two answers. One, it is certainly contextual, right?
Right.
And two, you've got to be nimble. And what I mean by that is what the solution might be in California, for instance, or even Washington is totally different than what the solution might be in Florida on that reform, for instance, that I just talked about, where that question was really prompted. And what makes that initiative so successful is that it's not run by you or I. It's actually run, catch this, by the community that's most affected, returning citizens.
Right, gotcha.
Returning citizens actually led that campaign. We helped, we accelerated, but returning, Desmond Mead is here with me right now at the conference. I just talked to him about a victory they just got in the Court of Appeals that they pretty much struck down as unconstitutional.
Right.
Those pretty much neo poll taxes that were implemented as a response to that victory. And they won with a message. This is going to blow your mind. of love.
Really?
Literally of love. Yes, love. They literally said to folks who were Republican, who were Democrat, Independent, who were Trump supporters, who were Hillary supporters, whomever, they asked them, they poll tested them, they literally asked them, do you have someone, catch this, who you love, who's ever made a mistake?
Period.
Period. And everyone registered with that, and everyone registered with the message that everyone deserves second chances.
Yeah,
that
I stopped loving them after they made the mistake. So that's probably part of my problem. just kidding.
How Christian is that?
But that's interesting. That's an interesting way to come at that, though. That's very, very interesting.
But that's not the same solution, right?
No, you're right.
Somewhere else with a different initiative. So you certainly do have to be nimble, and it has to be contextual, and you should be rooted in the community that you're trying to advance these reforms around. One thing I would add is a very important and quick tool is actually vote.org. Not vote.gov, that's the government-run one,
right.
But vote.org. They're a nonprofit, and in a matter of seconds, many folks think, for instance, they're still registered. You talked about that, where there's been a lot of purging going on. That's the only tool I found online where within seconds you can check your registration just to make sure it's still intact, because folks have been finding out through this powerful tool that their registration is actually inactive, that they've actually been purged.
Right.
And they just partnered with the Campaign Legal Center to now have a piece on there that speaks to those with past records, because even with those who, and it speaks to your question that you brought up, even with those who might have had their right to vote restored, there's still a lot of murky area. Many people, even in states like Alabama that have moved forward, you know, many people who are affected don't know they can vote. So there's now a link there on that vote.org website where you can see, okay, let me ask you a few questions now about your record, and I can tell you exactly whether or not you actually have the right to vote and where you should vote and so on and so forth.
It's an incredible effort and important work by my friend Rinaldo Pearson, folks. Like I said, check him out at represent.us. That's the website. We'd love for you to go and learn more. It's grassroots. It is the nation's largest grassroots anti-corruption campaign. And given what we've seen and learned since the impeachment trial, the actions of this president and the steps taken by the attorney general, now more than ever, we need folks to be diligent and vigilant in understanding and really coming together around, I guess, the idea that, hey, our criminal justice system, our justice system does matter, and the leadership that's involved in it needs to be held accountable and responsible. And that's exactly what Rinaldo and the folks that represent us are all about. Rinaldo, thank you so much, man, for taking time and coming in and sharing the message and creating some awareness around a lot of good work that you are doing out there on the streets of America.
Absolutely. And thank you for using that word vigilance. As Thomas Jefferson famously said, eternal vigilance is the price of freedom.
Amen. And amen. I like that, baby. All right, folks, that does it for this time together. Please don't forget to check us out on all those wonderful little places like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn. Download this episode and many others from the Michael Steele Podcast. It's always a treat when you do that. We'll be back next time with more great conversation and good fun right here at the podcast. You guys take care. Later.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.